So last week we had a chance to sort of lay out some of the yesodos and some of the dimensions of the discussions of Tam Ke'ikar in broad strokes. And one of the dimensions of Tam Ke'ikar we discussed last week is that, as we see from this Mishnah in Psachim, Ayin Hei Mei Beis, and elsewhere, so one of the questions you're going to ask yourself in tracking Tom. So one question is there an engine? Is there a force that's driving the Tom? But another question is going to be how far, assuming that there's something driving the Tom, so how far does the Tom travel? How far, how deeply is the Tom Nivlam? And that really animates all of Siman Tzadi Aleph as a whole, and defines where we're going forward. Because of the first three C from Siman Tzadi Aleph, which we had learned together two chaburos ago, so that was about cases where you have Basar and Chalav, and there's no Nesinas Tam whatsoever. The first three Seifim were Basar and Chalav, and they're both cold. Basar and Chalav, and there's no... Basar and Chalav, and there's no sharing of flavor. It's just a question of Basar and Chalav Tzonim, just a question of making sure that there's no residue from one left on the other, but there's no Blia. And from where we're up to going forward, from Siman Tzadi Aleph Sif Dalet going forward, we're going to talk about different situations of Havla, different situation where there is absorption of flavor. It's not enough just to clean surfaces. And over the course of Siman Tzadi Aleph, we're going to be looking at a number of different mechanisms, a number of different forces that could drive flavor in, beginning with heat, but then we move on to others as well. And what ties together, as we begin to see, since the remainder of Siman Tzadi Aleph, is that second question of how deeply it goes in. The remainder of Siman Tzadi Aleph are cases where the Tam is Nivla, but barely, very shallowly. Different situations where it only goes into Kedei Klipa. We're going to get started. We're going to focus tonight on Mitzvah Sif Dalet, which is cases where there's heat. Cases where the heat is driving the flavor, and yet it's only a Kedei Klipa, Ilan Tata. And then later on, we'll talk about some other cases as well. The case of Maliach Karoseach also drives Tom in, is natural heat, but the saltiness, the salty brine acts in place of heat. And that drives time in, but only into the first layer, only Kedei Klipa. And then Tosfos on Tzadi Vav Amud Beis points that if you put the Gemara, so yeah, there are other situations as well. Whether it's a case of a broiling where there's only a very thin layer of a sauce applied, a mashu b'tzliya, whether it's a case of a tzlitzonin, an already broiled food, which is now cold, but absorbing liquid, the different situation, that's what's going to tie together the remainder of Siman Tzadi Aleph, is different cases where there is Blia Kedei Klipa. So let's... again, Kedei Klipa we already saw earlier. Kedei Klipa means thick enough that you could pull off a whole peel. We saw that earlier in the beginning of Siman Tzadi Aleph, Pesachet Shuvah had called this discussion, when there's no blia whatsoever, when there's no absorption of flavor, it's just a question of removing the surface residue, the two things that touch. So sometimes you require gray dust, sometimes you require scraping, you have a soft food, you know, some soft, moist vegetable, and it got some trefa schmalz schmir on it, or some soft vegetable got some milchus or fleischig schmir on it. So it may not be practical to wash it. You may have to just scrape the surface. That's the greda. But greda means that you're scraping, and not necessarily thick enough to pull off a single whole layer. Kedei klipa means it's just thick enough that it comes off as a single peel. A peel, kedei klipa. So Sif Dalet is rooted in the sugya, actually not in Chulin. So if you get a chance to look at the course of the week, the sugya in Maseches Psachim. The sugya Maseches Psachim, which builds off of the Mishnah Ayin Hei Mei Beis, which mentions Netila as well, Kalipa rather, as well as Netila, both a thin peel, which is where we're headed, as well as something thicker when it's already an inch deep. And And the Gemara presents the machlokas Rav and Shmuel. The girl wants to know, what do you do when you have heat in motion? And the Gemara describes it as top and bottom, ila and tata. So if I have, the Gemara tells me, it tells us, that if you have chamotah, you have two foods falling into one falling into the other. If they're both hot, savada, there's bliya. They're both cold, so of course there's no bliya. Okay, so far so good. The question is, well, one is hot, one is cold. So do we define this as a hot case or a cold case? It's half and half, but you've got to make a decision. So that's the machlokas that you saw, machlokas Rav and Shmuel, where they say ilah gavar tata gavar. Do you say that the top one is defining, or do you say the bottom one is defining? So Rav says that ilah gavar, that the top one is dominant, and therefore if you have something hot flowing, something cold, chamu tochtson is a hot case and there is bliya, and tzona tocham, if the cold thing is falling, then there's no bliya. And Shmuel says the reverse. Shmuel says tata gavar, so we care about is what's defining, what's dispositive, is the bottom one. And the Gemara has a series of attempted rayas based on the Mishnah Haman Beis in support of Rav. Each time the Gemara says it's not necessarily a raya. If you read the Mishnah properly, it's not necessarily a raya that he law gavar. And then after a series of attempts to prove like Rav, then the Gemara says we have two brises that support Shmuel. Two brises are pretty straightforward. Tanya kavasi de Shmuel on the first wide line on Vav Amud Aleph. Chamu tocham aser. V'chein tzon shishon tocham aser. Hot falling to hot or cold falling to hot. It's all aser. Chamu tocham aser. Chamu tocham aser. Mediach. If it's hot and cold, the brothers have to rinse it off. So that's quite clearly like Rav. And then the Gemara is the Tanya Idach. Another Bryce also supports Rav. And that Bryce, I'm sorry, what did I say, Rav? I'm sorry. Let's try that again. The Gemara has a bunch of Rai, attempted Rai in favor of Rav, that Ilah Gavar from the Mishnah, the Gemara rejects them. Thank you for catching the mistake. Then the Gemara has two Braises, Kavase de Shmuel. And the Braises are almost identical, except that the second one, this speaks not only in abstract terms about Cham and Tzonin, the second Braise talks specifically about Basar Roseach and Chalav Roseach, but meat and milk. So, but other than that, they're identical. So you have two brises. So we showed him say, that this is more or less muskim, I think, across the board, unanimous, that we pass on like Shmuel. Usually the Gemara is a rule, the Gemara is a principle, that hilchsa karav bi surei kashmuel bedini. You usually have machlek is Rav and Shmuel. Often when the Gemara has klalei apsak, it's one or the other. Usually the Gemara has klalei apsak, as we pass on like, you know, Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, he passed like Rabbi Yehuda. Machlokas Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda passed like Rabbi Yosi. Machlokas Abayin Rav, he passed like Rav, except for Yalka Gam. Here the Gemara says we differentiate based on the area of halacha. Apparently Rav, Rav Shechti says it over, the Rav was more focused on Yisrael Heter. Shmuel was more focused on Dini Mamonas. That, I guess in our anachronistic terminology, we would say that Shmuel's yeshiva was more yeshivish than Rav's yeshiva. And the Shmuel's yeshiva focused on Nashim Nezikim. Shmuel, I believe, was a Rosh Yeshiva, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva Nahar Da. And you see later in Shas also, Rav Nachman, who succeeded him in Nahar Da, also was Hilchzuker of Nachman Bedini, and the Nahar Da'e. In Nahar Da'e, the Tamilcham of Nahar Da'e are often seen as being particularly strong in Dini Mamonos. That apparently Narda had that focus. Again, they learned called Tarakula, but their primary focus was Nashim Nezikin, and the Rav's primary focus was Yisrael Heter. So he Arachayim Yardaya in our terminology. So that's usually if you have Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, it's we should know how we paskin based on the area of halacha. In Bava Kama, there's an interesting Machlokas. It has to do with Cheskas Gimel Zimini, which is sort of a crossover. It has nafkamis both in the world of Dina Mamanas, like Shartam Shamuad, as well as in the world of Yisrael Heter, let's say Vestos. So that's the Rosh and others discuss how do you determine what area of halacha does this machlokas belong to. But here you have a different type of switch, which is that the Rishonim say that although the rule is in general, Hechzagrav B'Yisuri, and this is clearly Yisrael Heter, is clearly not Dina Mamanas, but since you have But you have to look at Sugi the Shmaita. You have to look at the way the Shach V'Tayr plays out. The Gemara did attempt three rayas for Rav. They were all rejected. Then the Gemara, that might have been some evidence, but then the Gemara had two brises, thank you, in support of Shmuel, and there was no response. Kind of us to Shmuel, Tanya Idach, and there was no comeback, so Rishonim say that is dispositive. Even though in general, it's not a halacha Moshe Misina, you pass like Rav Bizuri. It means in general, that's the way when the later Amoraim, Shech does no sechiz, when the later Amoraim voted, I had a paskin under the earlier Machloksin, so at some point they would look back and see other patterns. So if they saw, look, in Baba Basra, Robert Reusi, we always pass them this way, so they made that into a rule. So in general, when there was a Machlok as Rav and Shmuel, almost invariably, in the later generations, they ended up passing like Rav and Isvat, they ended up passing like Shmuel and Dinah Mamas. But here, that was not the case. So here, the Gemara indicates that Shmuel's position is dominant, and that is how we pass. We pass in Tatagava, we pass in Tzonotocham. So if cold milk falls onto hot meat, it's no different than hot milk falling onto hot meat, and that is going to be Nivla Bakulo. As we mentioned last week, Nivla Bakulo has both the Kula and the Chumra. We'll get to that more in Simon Sadi Beis. There's Nivla Bakulo, so on the one hand, there's potential for the entire piece of meat to become a tray, but there's also potential for the entire piece of meat to stay kosher, because of Nivla Bakulo, so that means we're not assuming that it's going to remain. We're not assuming it's going to remain concentrated at the impact spot, but the Kedei Klipa, we're assuming it's going to spread evenly throughout. So if there's a shishim in, let's say, the hot piece of meat down below, connected the cold milk that fell in it, then everything is mutter. Whereas chamotoch tzonein, so we paskin tato gavar. So chamotoch tzonein, the Gemara says, in principle should be a tzonein case. So in principle should be no blia whatsoever, but not really a tzonein case, the Gemara says, ad the maker lebala. It's true that the cold bottom will cool off the hot top that's falling in, but it's going to be some degree of heat until that settles. So that's why the Gemara says, and this is our first example, and from a Simon Sadi Aleph perspective, first example of Kedei Klipa. That's what the Gemara says, is a Cham Atoch Tzonein, so it's Nivla Kedei Klipa. Yeah, question.
What? I'm still trying to understand it. It's just normal, like, physics. So, like, the bottom one is going to be the dominant, substance. So like, what is Rav's hobby? Like, where was Rav coming from? Like, why do you think Ola, because the way he read the Mishnah, that there were had to be that Ola Gavar? Like, Shmuel just makes more sense.
Why?
Because the bottom one is...
Which principle of thermodynamics?
The hot. Like, the bottom one, like, not really. Like, the hot one doesn't cool off the bottom. When you drop something into a pot of something, that thing is the dominant substance, and that's going to dictate what the temperature is going to be for the other aspect.
Well, so...
The tiny thing on the bottom and a big piece on top. Is the bottom really going to dominate?
No, I guess not.
Yeah, the truth is, I think the post can write also. So you might have said that the heat rises, so you would expect from that perspective that that's not
Gavar. The pouring aspect, and they still.
Right. So what you see, and you see it more, I think, in Rishonim, is that it has less to do with geography and more to do with motion. It's not so much a question of which one is top and which one is bottom. They talk about, the Rishonim start talking about, if you have like liquid dripping, you have flowing liquid, the pot over you have a pot of milk and the saucepan of milk on the fire, and the milk overflows, then it starts flowing and it hits a piece of meat on the counter. So we see the meat as the Tata, and the milk as the ilah. And we say, if that's a cold piece of meat on the counter and a stream of overflowing hot milk comes by, so we see that as cham l'toch tzonin. That's a kedei klipa case. Even though it's not clear that the milk is hitting the meat from the top, sounds like it's just sort of from the side, So I think that's what Post can point out, that Ilan Tata have more to do with the one that's in motion versus the one that's stationary. That's what I was saying before. The sugya of Sachma and Vavim Rav is really about heat in motion. I think that's the best way to put it. So what do you do when you have a hot, especially since we pass like Shmuel, that Tata Gavar, meaning that the full strength from a Blias Tam perspective, the full strength, the heat is obviously, you know, when you talk about different forces, different methods of Tam transfer, so obviously heat is the most significant one. There's Maliach and there's Kavosh and so on and so forth. The Davar Charev, obviously the most famous and the most powerful usually is heat. But one way to formulate what Shmuel is saying is that the full force, the full power of heat to cause Tam transfer is when the heat is stationary.
But then one, I forgot which author was it that said that's only when it's not on the fire.
Right.
If the tata's on the fire, then this is our whole sugya doesn't even apply. Then everyone agrees.
Right, because we're talking about a case where there's no longer a source of heat, of ongoing heat going into the system. The system is closed. You have a hot item, you have a cold item, and now there's nothing driving more heat into the system. Correct, right? Correct.
But why do they, the case of the Mishnah in Pesachim is the carbon pesach in the oven. So there's a source of heat there constantly. So why making a distinction now with heat? Would be off the fire when the Mishnah was talking about a case of in the fire.
So I would take your point and turn it around. The Gemara originally thought that this is one of the rejected attempts to prove Rav from our Mishnah. The Gemara was originally thought that we could use the Mishnah on a Haman Beis as a riot to Rav on the assumption that the Mishnah talks about the interaction, the fluid, the gravy ricocheting off of the
wall,
right, off the animal to the wall, the back to the animal. But the Gemara said that the raya was based on the assumption that the wall of the tanur is cold,
right.
Meaning it sounds like the fire is out. How's the wall cold? Obviously means the fire is out, and the walls of the tanur have already cooled down. But the carbon pesach is still hot. But in a chanami, as soon as the Gemara says no, maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case where the oven is fired up and everything is hot. So then it's obviously irrelevant. It's irrelevant number one because everything is hot, so it's cham to cham. But also, as soon as there's an additional heat source, so then we're no longer in the world of ilah gavar tata gavar. Yeah. So let's just to recap. And so what emerges from the sugya machlokas Rav and Shmuel, he passed like Shmuel, that tata gavar, that if you have stationary hot item interacting with a moving cold item, so then that's considered to be a basically hot situation, and this will be a bliya bakulo. But if you have a stationary cold item interacting with moving heat, so then fundamental, it's not bliya bakulo, it's basically a cold situation, but there is some heat. There is some heat. The heat of the moving item is not as significant as it would have been if the stationary item would be hot. So it causes the heat of the moving item, only causes a kedei klipa. It doesn't cause a bliya bakulo, it causes a kedei klipa. Now it's worth noting, the Beis Yosef points out, we will mirtz Hashem, going forward, be seeing a fair number of machloks in between the Rashba and the Ra'ah, the very common pair of Bnei Plukta in the world of Isa v'Heter. They were both Talmidim of the Ramban and Rabbeinu Yonah, and both Rabbeim of the Ritva. They were contemporaries, the Rashba and the Ra'ah. So when you're younger in Yeshiva, you know the Rashba primarily from his Chidushim, the Blue Svarim, Chidush Rashba and Shas. The Ra'ah does not have, there is some published Chidush Ra'ah, not as much. The Ra'ah and the Sugya happens to be called by the Ran, who was again a grand Talmud of both the Rashba and the Ra'ah. just to place him a little more, in addition to being a contemporary of the Rashba, the Ra'ah, I believe, was a grandson or great-grandson of the Baal Hamar, Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi. So the Ra'ah, Rabbeinu Aaron HaLevi, was a descendant. So, but in the world of Issa V'Heter, in addition to Chiddush Manshas, the Rashba's major halachic sefer we already began to look at is Taras HaBayis, which begins with the topics of the first Chelek of Yerodeah, Shechita, Treifas, Bas V'Chav, Taruvus, and so forth. And there's a running critique, Ryan Hasaga is written by the Ra'ah, called the Berak HaBayis. The Chazek is Berak HaBayis. I want to point out all the cracks in the house. Rashba wrote Taras HaBayis, so he wrote the Ra'ah, wrote a Berak HaBayis. There are cracks in the house that we need to fix up. There's the way the Taras HaBayis is usually published. You have the Taras HaBayis in the center, then you have the Berak HaBayis of the Ra'ah, and then there's the Mishmeres HaBayis, which is the defense, defending the house. Defending the Taras HaBayis of Rashba against the attacks of the Ra'ah and the Berak HaBayis. There is some debate about who wrote the Mishmeres HaBayis, whether it's the Rashba himself responding or whether it's not. And Nafkamina is, do you assume that whatever the Rashba, do you assume anything in Mishmeres HaBayis is the Rashba? And do you assume that Nasei has to fit with all the other Rashbas? Okay, but be that as it may, Machlokas Rashba Ra'ah, certainly between Taras HaBayis and Berak HaBayis is a common recurring theme. In the early parts of Yerodeah, in the parts that are based in the Taras HaBayis, and we have Machlokas Rashba Ra'ah right here. Beis Yosef quotes, the Ra'ah has an opinion which is not widely accepted. Not accepted at all, does not even make it to page Shulchan Aruch. But the Ra'ah was of the opinion, the way the Gemara presents it, the Gemara initially presents, certainly the Brises, that there are two levels. There's a case of Bliya, a case of no Bliya. So if we pass like Shmuel, and those brises. So there's cham l'tal cham or tzon l'tal cham. There is bliya, and then cham l'tal tzon l'tal tzon no bliya. And then the Gemara says, well, it's actually not two levels, it's three levels, right? Because cham l'tal tzonen is kedei klipa, while tzon l'tal tzonen is no bliya, just mediach. So the Ra'ahs have the opinion there actually are four levels. He says, not only do we differentiate within a kol tata'a, but we differentiate slightly between chamatel chsonin and talmatel chsonin, kedei klipa versus noblia. The Ra'ah is of the opinion that basically some quotes that we should all, he quotes b'shem the Ra'an, I think. The Ra'an b'shem the Ra'ah. We should also differentiate between chamatel cham versus sonin l'tel cham. They're both tata'a cham. But the Ra'ah thought maybe if they're both hot, then it's Bliya B'Kulo, but if only the bottom is hot, then it's just a Kedei Netila. So you have Marsh four levels. Kulo, Kedei Netila, Kedei Klipa, and zero. But the Rashba and the other Rishonim do not accept that. That's not at all the simple reading of our Gemara. The Gemara did make the distinction about Kedei Klipa, did not at all distinguish between Cham L'Toch Cham and Son L'Toch Cham. So Halach L'Mais, we pass like the Rashba, that Tzon L'Tocham is Bliya B'Kulo. There is another machlokas where we show him in the sugya, which is not nearly as clear how we paskin, and that will make it to the page in Shulchan Aruch. So the machlokas appears in Tosfos. On the bottom of Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, and in the Rush. The Rush on this sugya is not Pesachim. There is no Rush in the seventh parak of Pesachim. The seventh parak of Pesachim, the five Kachim Prakim of Pesachim, Parakeh to Parak Tes, don't have any riff or Rush, because they're mostly Nahalach HaMayitz Mizvan HaZeh. Meher Yibane Beis HaMikdash, right now we're not bringing Karim Pesach, not yet. So there is no riff or Rush at all on Parakeh Tzat Solon. So that's why, very conveniently, if you take a look at the in Mishpat near Mitzvah, at the bottom of Ayin Hamid Beis, the first line of the Gemara, Cham L'Toch Cham, is a Zion in the brackets. A Zion in the brackets, it actually tells you where to look. Usually, Ayin Mishpat near Mitzvah tells you where to look in four Svarim. Rambam, Tur, Shulchan Aruch, and the Smag, Sefer Mitzvah's Gadol. But here, it is something he does very rarely. He tells you where to look in the Riff and the Rush. Tell you where we're looking at the Riff and Chulin, where we're looking at the Rush and Chulin, and the reason is because Shalom B'Mekoman, because you're not going to find anything in the back of the Gemara here. So they want to tell you, you're going to have to look in Kalabasar. In the middle of Kalabasar, you'll find it's not Garcinan. Everyone's already have that in the rib from the Rosh. The Kora Gemara Shalob and Makomo in the context in which it's relevant. The Rambam does that thoroughly. The Rambam totally reorganizes everything, al Seder topics in Mishnah Torah. So the Riff and the Rosh don't reorganize thoroughly, but every once in a while they'll gather things Shalob and Makomo, particularly when, as here, there is no local place to put it, and it very obviously has an address elsewhere. So the Tosas and Banavayin Vavav and Aleph, and that the Rosh, back in Perakal Abbas, the similar Amadal, they quote this Machlokas Balia Tosfos between Ben Otam and the Riva. And they were arguing over a nuance in the Gemara. Tosa actually, it's a Machlokas HaAlacha, but Tosa opens with a Diuk in the Gemara. We had two Brises, one after the other. They're basically identical. The one difference is that the second one mentions Basil Tal Chalav. So Lamayna of Kamina. What was added? What's added by coining the second Brisa? What's added in the Brisa by having that added line of the Basil and Chalav? So Rabbeinu Tam has a very, very creative solution. He says it's to tell you a din. Not to tell you that this din applies to Basil B'Chalav. That might have been interesting in Chiddush too. And that's actually something the post can do, raise somewhat. Is this considered bishul for Basil B'Chalav purposes? Is creating Basil B'Chalav Daraisa? Or is it only creating Basil B'Chalav Drabanan? And that, by the way, leads into the question of whether Irui is Mavashal or not, perhaps. But Rabbeinu Tam says, let's look at the language. Basar Roseh, Shinafel Sachav Roseh, the second Brisa, the hot meat falls into the hot milk, or Tzonin Shinafel Tocham, cold meat into hot milk, so Asr, okay. But then remember, all of the Chams and Tzonins in the second Brisa are really referring to Basar and Chalav, so Cham l'toch tzonin, v'toch tzonin l'toch tzonin mediach. What does that mean? Hot meat into cold milk. Or cold meat into cold milk mediach. And the Gemara says, no, cham l'toch tzonin, oi mediach. Hot meat into cold meat, just going to rinse it off. Ademekel yev shalav balaporta, klipamia niboy. So they say, yeah. What the Brisa really should say is, cham l'toch tzonin kolif. It's basar cham, the Rabbi Natan points out. We're still talking about the second Brisa, basar cham. Basar cham l'toch chalav tzonin, your kolif. So what does that mean, your kolif? You're peeling which? You can only peel meat, you can't peel milk.
It's not possible. Maybe they mean cheese, or they just
call it chalav? It could be, although perhaps. And maybe that's how the Riva would respond. But the Gemara definitely will at times, the Mishnayos will often talk about gavina, and they'll talk about chalav. So Rabbeinu Tam was of the opinion, and again, the Riva disagrees, and maybe that's why, David. Tam was of the opinion that the point was, even in that case, all you do is kolif. I mean, all you do is kolif. And Tam says, because I could have argued, I could have said that you need to take klipa of the milk too. Well, I mean, could take klipa of the milk? You can't peel the milk. The meat, you'll take the meat, and you'll shave off the outer layer and throw in the garbage, and everything else you eat. What do you do with the milk? So we could have said, and Tom says, and the Riva thinks we actually do say, that you have to calculate what would be the volume of milk that would be a kedek klipa. In other words, you had this piece of hot meat fell into the cold milk, so I can think of what's the surface area of the meat, and as when it fell into the milk, there was that surface area times the thickness of the kedek klipa, and think of it, calculate how much volume of milk that is, and ask yourself, is there sheet? So you say, look, it was chamutok tzonin. So that amount of milk was takaboleya, milk fleshik of flavor. And now we have to figure out, is that tray for milk bottle b'shishim and the rest of the milk? So if I have a big container of milk and a little hot piece of meat falls in, so yeah, there's clearly all the milk mixes around, and that little bit of milk that was in direct contact with the meat, it becomes batel b'shishim. If it's a small piece of meat and a big vat of milk. But let's say it was a pretty sizable piece of meat, and specifically in terms of surface area, and it fell into a shallow pan of milk. You're not going to have shishim. If you think about, you know, what is that, how much of the milk was in direct contact, or within kedei klipa of the meat, when it first fell in, that amount of milk might be 10% of the total volume of milk in the pan. So maybe I should say all the milk is treif. Right? Because the kedei klipa of the milk became with bolea, fleishika flavor, and now it gets mixed with everything else. A piece of meat is solid, so I could see which is the kedei klipa and which is the rest. So I shave it off, it doesn't move. So I can, with a piece of meat, I can identify which part of the meat was bolea milk, which wasn't. But the milk is all liquid. So the riva, one of the baliatosis, Taka says, yeah, that's what you gotta do. You gotta calculate, based on the surface area of the meat, how much of the milk was within the kedei klipa of the meat, and then ask yourself, is that do you have shishim kasher milk against that little bit of kedei klipa milk or not? Rav Yehuda Tam says you don't do that. He says you don't do that. How do I know? He says that was the point of the braisa. The braisa only said kolef. It didn't say anything about the milk. It said kolef and you're fine. So kolef obviously means peel the meat. You're not peeling the milk. So they said, right at the time, said the Brisa should have said kolef and calculate the milk. We didn't say that. Right at the time said that's why you have the second Brisa that adds the Basar Chav to make that point that there's no such thing as kedei klipa on nozlim on liquids. And the Riva says no, that's what kolef means on a piece of meat. Kolef means actually literally peel it. And milk, it means calculate. What would the kedei klipa be? And again, figure out the bitul b'shishim. So that's the machlokas, Rabbeinu Tam and the Riva. The Tosas has it. Bam Tosas, Ayin Vav Menal Fim Tzachim. Again, as I mentioned before, you look in the corresponding Rush in Siman Lamadal in our parak in Kalabas and Chulin. He also quotes this machlokas. The Tur points out that the Rambam sounds like Rabbeinu Tam. The Torah of Medag, the Rambam agrees with Rabbeinu Tam. Lahakel. And the Divrei Chamudos, if you look on the Divrei Chamudos in the bottom of the Rush, he quotes a lot from Sifrei HaPoskim to follow up on more details. So almost like a Pischei Tshuva on the Rush a little bit. So he points out, interesting, he says, you know what's another example of this? Another example of this is not just in the Gemara's case, going to the time was hot solid into cold liquid. He says, how about hot liquid into a tray for pan? I have a cold tray for kli, a cold tray for pan or a plate, whatever. Cold tray for bowl. And I pour it's the tray for kli is cold and it's clean. And I take hot milk or hot whatever, hot liquid, and I pour it into the cold pan. So the Divrei Chamudos quotes that should also be subject to Machlokas, Rabbeinu Tam, and Riva. Should we say it's Chamotoch Tzonen? It doesn't matter. So now the top is liquid, is Vas. Let me say it's Chamotoch Tzonen. So Chamotoch Tzonen, the question is, do you need, could they, you have to cheshbin, is there a dinner, could they cleep on liquid also? You have to cheshbin it and calculate the bitul b'shishim or not. This is according to Rabbeinu Tam. You pour hot, burning hot liquid into a cold, clean tray for kli, kosher. Absolutely kosher, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Because there's no kedei klipa by liquids. According to Riva, no. It's not going to be blia b'kulo, but you have to figure out kedei klipa. In other words, you don't have to worry about how thick the kli is. You don't need shishim against the entire volume of the tray for kli. You need shishim against the kedei klipa thickness, which is obviously very thin, that amount of milk, or whatever the hot liquid is, the hot kosher liquid is, that you poured in. So that's interesting. That machlokes makes it to the page of Shulchan Aruch. This machlokes is Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam versus the Riva. Let's take a look in Shulchan Aruch. Se'if Dalet, Simen Sadi Aleph, Se'if Dalet. Basar v'chal of Roschen, Shenes Arvu Yachad. Right after three Se'ifim, once again after three Se'ifim of cold and cold, now we move on to some heat. Basar v'chal of Roschen, Shenes Arvu Yachad. I have a hot meat and hot milk that mixed together, so that'll be Cham l'tocham. V'afilu Basar Tzonein l'tochal v'roseach. or chalav tzol in the toch basar oseh. Or even if it's not cham toch cham, if it's tzol in the toch cham. And you'll notice he does. That doesn't matter whether it's solid into liquid, liquid into solid. It's irrelevant. But if it's the if it's into hot, hot into hot or cold into hot, hakol aser. Why? We pass in tatal gavra. We pass in like Shmuel. Unequivocally, we pass in like Shmuel. The Taz. This is the first time officially that we're talking about heat at all. So the Taz in Sifka and Dalet points out something that the Beis Yosef raises also, which is you do need to think about the definition of heat. Shir HaChamimus Kamahi, that is discussed in Simen Kuf Hei. Simen Kuf Hei is in Hilchos Taruvus. We looked last week at Simen Tzadichef, the opening Simen. And Taruvus, Simen Kuf Hei is where a lot of the nuts and bolts of Tom transfer are hammered out in Taruvus. Simen Kuvay corresponds to Simen Tzadi Alf and Simen Tzadi Beis and so forth here in Bas Bahal. They tell you that there are certain things that are discussed more here, certain things are discussed more there. But Taz points out, here there isn't really the discussion of what is heat. We just assume we know what's called hot, what's called cold. And you look in Simen Kuvay, you actually get that discussion. That's a question of Yad. So let us know. As an aside, just to talk about that for a moment, there is... The Gemara talks about Yad Selesbo as being relevant for definition of Bishul, and we assume it's relevant for heat and other, that's the general shear of heat in most contexts. There are a couple of exceptions. There are a couple of halachas where there's a different definition of heat, but usually hot means Yad Selesbo. The question is, how many Yad Selesbo, but what does Yad Selesbo mean? And there's quite a range. There's quite a range from 120 degrees Fahrenheit or even less. All the way up to 160, 170s, which is remarkable. If you stop to ponder that for a moment, the 120 or the 114 is based on the Gemara. The first paragraph of Chulin discusses whether right after Shechita is the neck of the animal roseach or not. So you assume it's hot or not. So I think in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, he goes to Shlomo Zalman and said, well, we paskin that it's cold, but if there was a machlokas, it must be close. Yad Selesbo must be somewhere around there. So I believe the Rav Neuwirth, the author of Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, I believe he writes that Rav Shlomo Zalman recommended that he should do some experiments. And he started experimenting with, like, shechting animals, different animals and birds, and with a checking with thermometer after the shechita, how hot is it? I think he says geese or ducks were the hottest, and they were 113 degrees. So that's still tzonein, but it must be slightly above that is hot. That was the logic. So the question is, does that mean therefore 114 might be hot? Or you say 120? I think the OU, I think Shemesh Abbas Kosta says 114, 1 degree over, right? Maybe that's hot. And I think the OU assumes 120. Yeah, we're working with degrees. We weren't working that degree of granularity. But already 120, we would already be concerned that it might be Yad Selesbo. I believe that chocolate usually doesn't go over the 120s, somewhere in between 120 and 130. So if you would have a higher shear for Yad Selesbo, kashrus of chocolate would be much simpler. But we're already machmir for 120 or so to assume that perhaps Yad Selesbo. So chocolate naked equipment is subject to questions of nisinas tam and kashering and so on and so forth. But again, the higher shear, the shear would go as high as the 170s. You look at a container of Kenem grape juice, it says under the hashkach of the Tzeilim Arav, that's specifically because the Tzeilim Arav has one of the highest shiurim of Yad Selesbo. So when they make it mavushal, when they pasteurize it, make it mavushal, they're machmer that should be to the highest standard of Yad Selesbo. Willig points out sometimes, this is a remarkable thing, that the span of temperatures that might be Yad Selesbo is around 60 degrees Fahrenheit. In other words, now, consider the fact that the entire span of temperatures where water is liquid is 180 degrees, from 32 to 212. So around a third of that is in this, like, Ben HaShmash of Suffolk, hot Suffolk cold. It's a very, very significant Suffolk. So I will at once suggest that putting aside some of the details, the overall issue that's driving sort of the wide range of Shitos is the question of how you translate soletus. To jump back because of heat Does that mean when you're surprised or when you're not surprised? As if you expect heat, you're able to handle much more than if you were shocked, you thought it was cold. And I don't know if he pointed this out, but I think I once looked, the word soled, as Rashi points out, it's Mishnaic Hebrew, it's really a biblical root. It's the pasuk in Iov, asalda. If you look in the Rishonim there, it seems like it may be Machlokas, Radak, and other, they are Radak and Ibn Ezra, I forget who, whether to translate soled as to be surprised and to jump back, or to be, you know, jump back the fact that you're not surprised. This machlok is but maybe rooted in machlok's Rishonim and the Psukim and Eo. Okay, so whatever it is, so that this comes up practically, Lamaisa, we would be considered ready from 120 or 114, at least a possibility that this is Cham, we have to apply the rules of Chamimus. Yes?
Regarding the Poskim and this huge range that you've talked about, can't they narrow it down by just sticking your finger in it and measuring the temperature and gradually get it down to a smaller range, like maybe 110 to 130 or something?
Right. So that's a good question. Why not experiment? That was exactly right, Willock's point, that part of what's driving the breadth of the range is because we're not sure what it is we're testing for. Are we testing to see if you're able to sustain your hands there even when you do expect the heat, which is obviously going to be a much higher temperature? Or are we testing to see when your hand would reflexively snap back if you didn't expect the heat? So that's why you have that. And it's a little hard to experiment because obviously different people have different tolerances for heat. You could do enough, right?
Can probably reduce the range substantially, even if you don't pin it down exactly.
There definitely are different approaches. I think some of them are. Then Rav Soloveitchik, I think Rav Soloveitchik said in Shurim, he thought it's somewhere between 140, 160. So that sort of whittles down a little more. So Rav Neuver, it's 114, is all the 120, they're also based on experimentation because they have other evidence about what's considered Cham and Sonin. So Shulchan Aruch quotes, if the stationary item is over 120, let's say, then we're concerned about Bliya Bakulo. We reject the Ra'ah in favor of the Rajba Udi Ime, that even Sonin Tocham is also Bliya Bakulo. Hakol Aser. And then, Burai Kos Tatal Gavar. Okay. And then the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, "Have a chaver oseah shenafal al basar tzoni." But if you have hot milk that spills onto cold meat, or basar oseah shenafal to chalav tzonin, or you have a hot piece of meat that falls into a pan of cool milk, so if it's cham l'toch tzonin, so then koleif ha basar v'ashara basar mutter. Peel the meat, take the meat out, and take off a peel, and the rest of the meat is fine. Okay. So a few points. So number one is the Shach at the end of Sifkat and Zayin points out that even though in Hilchas Bishul and Shabbos, we differentiate between Nifsak HaKiluach and Lo Nifsak HaKiluach, there's a stream of hot liquid pouring down, you were Kli Rishon, so we might differentiate between whether it's a solid stream or you're dripping it. And it's nifsak hakiluach, the flow was cut. But the Shach says, here we do not. Even if it's nifsak hakiluach, so it's reduced, we still do say, k'dei klipa you need. And on the other hand, even if it's low nifsak hakiluach, even though there's a steady, continuous stream, it still only requires the k'dei klipa, but does not require more. Now the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, to finish up the story, by telling us, well, chalav mutter kulo, in a case of chamu toch tzonein, the milk is entirely mutter, and as I tell you in the parentheses, that's the Rambam and the Rebbe and Tam and other, okay, that's the position of the Rebbe Tam and the Rambam, those who agree with them, and then finally, nafu zel toch tzonein mediach habaser mutter, right? If they're both cold, so then all you have to do, that takes us back to the first three C from the simon. They're both cold, there's no blia whatsoever, you just have to rinse surfaces, and you're fine. Now the Ramah adds something here, which drives the Shach to raise some questions, and his questions ultimately lead to a deeper understanding of the overall issue. Because you'll notice that the Shach of Katan Tes and the Chal of Mutar Kula, where the Shulchan Aruch passes the Akrabe Tam and the Rambam, the other Rishonim against the Riva, so the Shach of Katan Tes says, Hatam, you want to know why? Chal of Mutar Kula, why? What's Pshat in the Rain of Tam? So, Ayyem B'Sivkan Shalifneze. Look in the previous Sivkan, the long Sivkan Ches. Sivkan Ches connects to the Ramah. The Ramah said, V'makam Shabbasot Tzarech Klipa Im Lo Kilafu Bishlokach Mutar B'Dievet. Let's say you had a case, Chamatov Tzonin. You were supposed to peel the piece of meat. You were supposed to take off the Klipa. And you didn't. You forgot. B'Neze B'Shogi, whatever it is. It's just in B'Shogi. He meant to, he got distracted, he got mixed up, and says, okay, you forgot to do it now, it's a big deal. No, but then you cooked it. I had a piece of meat, let's say I have a raw piece of meat, and the hot milk splashed all over it, so I was really supposed to peel the raw meat to take it, because the first technique was the bli of chalav, and I didn't, and now I cooked it. I take this roast and I put it in the oven, so now everything is spreading all over the place. So now what? Rama says, based on they say it's called the Aruch. The Aruch is short for the Isra Vehetar Ha'aruch, which is a sefer written by Rabbeinu Yonah, not Rabbeinu Yonah the Sfardi, who was a contemporary of the Ramban, Rabbeinu who lived in the 1300s, Rabbeinu Yonah the Ashkenazi, who lived not long before the Rama, who wrote the sefer Isra Vehetar Ha'aruch, Aruch Klav Chavtes. Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rama quotes from the sefer Rabbeinu Yonah's Isra Vehetar Ha'aruch, that if you forgot, if you didn't, what's it called? You didn't peel it, and you cooked it, so mutter. Why? Why is that? It's all surprising. Why is that? I mean, part of the meat is strafe, and then I cooked it all together, so I have to figure out if there's shishim or not shishim. No. On the other hand, well, this is a Rav Tam. I had the Kedek Klipa, but it got blended together. Rav Tam said, you Kedek Klipa of the milk, but you don't need shishim against the Kedek Klipa of the milk, because it's all mutter, because it gets all blended together. So maybe that's what Rama is saying. Oh, well, yeah. You had the Kedek Klipa, but then it got blended with everything else, because when you cook it, all the flavors in the entire piece of meat intermingle. Simen Sadi Beis. So mutter. But really? I mean, Kedek Klipa doesn't count so much. Well, what does this mean? Which, again, raises the sort of question, what does Reyatam mean b'chlal? Taka, isn't the Riva logically correct? Reyatam and a Raya Hedik from the language of the Braisa. The Maisa, the Riva's logic, logically, if there's a bleib like klipa, says this sort of interaction creates a millimeter or a couple of millimeters of bleib. Okay, so it should be true whether it's a solid or liquid. It's a liquid, so then it mixes together. You have to figure out bitl b'shishim. Why taka do we make this distinction? By the way, Tom reasons, and then the Ramah sort of heightens it. There was mamish a klipa on the meat, but then I subsequently put it in the oven, so now all the flavors blend together. So the Shach enters into this issue in Sivka and Ches by saying, you know, it's a little difficult. We have other cases where we don't say that. We have cases, we have a Kedek Klipa, and then it gets blended. You have a Kedek Klipa, and then it gets blended. And then it gets subsequently cooked. It is a problem. See, he quotes, Taisves and Hagas Ashri and Mardechai and Aguda from Gipar Giranashe, that Mishnah Sarivav, Yerach Shenimlach Ba Giranashe and Nizbashel. So first you salted it, so there was a Kedek Klipa of penetration of the Tam the Giranashe into the surrounding meat, and then subsequently, let's see, maybe you remove the Giranashe and you cook the whole piece of meat. So you do need Shishim Kenegat Klipa. So how come here is different? And other cases, one case after another case after another case, so a couple lines down, he finally says, Nira, the loka amar harav de makan shatzar klipa bishluhu blo klipa mutter b'dieved. This is not a carte blanche. Anytime you have a kedek klipa that you then cook with the rest of the piece, it's all mutter. It's just dumi d'hacha d'chal of mutter. Is this only when it's a situation like as with a liquid? You can't have klipa. You can't have klipa. Dahainu shehu davar hanivlal. Va'klipa nisarva. The point is, it's something that it's fluid. It's fluid. So that's why it doesn't really lend itself to klipa. And that's what the Gra, the Shach continues to talk about, that's what the Gra summarizes. See in the Sif Katan Dalet. The Gra says, Ramah says, B'makam Shabbasar Sarach Klipa below Klafu. He says, Ayin Shach Ratzalomer, Im Nivla HaKlipa She'eno Makiro. That's what it means. Not to have a solid piece of meat and that there's a clear, distinct Klipa. But now you roasted it. No, nivla laklipa. Talk about a case where it's all like chopped meat. So you can't really identify the klipa to begin with. Do me the chalav. It sounds like what he's driving at. It sounds like what he's driving at is. Here again, the Prima Gadim has it also. Ayin Shach, Herich, Shach was Marich somewhat. That the Hechad the Nicker, boy Shishim Neger Klipa. Hechad the Ein Nicker Ein Tzarich Shishim. The question is there a definable, clear, distinct Kdei Klipa, which it remains Nicker, so then it will require Bittul B'Shishim subsequently. So, and what he seems to be driving at, that's why he points at Sivkan Tess, that he's really providing the underlying hesber for the basic shita ben otam. The reason why there's no kedei klipa on liquid is because it never really lands. If you have a solid piece of meat in a chamut tochtzonin situation, so the milk and meat or cheese and meat are in contact in a chamut tochtzonin type of way, so it's going to cause the kedei klipa. The meat is standing still, or whether the meat is falling or not, but the meat is a solid item. So the milk is going to penetrate, given that this sort of heat, it's a weaker heat because it's a chamut tochtzonin. So it's only going to drive the milk in to the first kedei klipa. But the kedei klipa is stationary. It's solid. So the milk has the chance to settle in to that, those couple of, those first few millimeters of the meat. But it's not going to work vice versa because the milk is constantly moving. It's a fluid. So it never really lands. I could calculate what would be the volume of a klipa of milk, but there is no klipa of milk. There isn't so many cubic centimeters of milk that are stationary, fixed around the meat. It's constantly moving, so it never really lands. It's davar hanivlal. That's what that's what the Shach is saying. And that's the Hezber Rabbeinu Tam. Because the klipa only makes sense if there's a solid fixed piece of meat, I could say, oh, that's where the milk landed. But I can't say that's where the meat flavor landed the milk. It was constantly moving. So Rivas says, no, you think about it in terms of percentages and ratios. Well, it must have gone into this amount of milk. But then Tom would say, the way the Shach has explained, no. If the milk is constantly moving, the different molecules of milk are moving in and out. There's no chunk that's there. So it's not nivla at all. There was no blia. Because it needs to be, if it's a stronger heat, we'll get to some inside bays, you have blia bakulo, right? Or we're talking about here as well, right? Tzon l'talcham, if you have tzon l'talcham, if I have hot, I had a hot saucepan of milk on the oven, and I take it off, I put it on the side, right? It's no longer a gabahesh. And then a cold piece of meat falls in. So that's blia bakulo. So there you will have flavor of the meat going into the milk because it's spreading throughout. But if the heat is such that it only has koach to go into the first couple of millimeters, so if the milk is constantly moving, because it's a liquid, it's a fluid, so it doesn't really land anywhere. That is the position of Rabbeinu Tam.
Why you call it the basar at all then?
I'm sorry?
Why are you taking off?
No, so the basar is a solid piece. So the milk will settle in to the first couple of millimeters, the first kedei klipa of the meat. So you have to be kolef the basar.
Yeah,
Oh, you mean in this case? Yeah, how does he understand the Rama? So,
Isn't
it? You're cooking the Brahma, says you're cooking the Basar. So if we're assuming that you need to clip against the Basar, and then you assume that milk was in it at some point. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I left out. I
didn't say this right. That's correct. When you look at this Rama, here's a question. You look at this Rama. The Shach is saying, let's see if we can put the pieces together. The Shach is saying like this: if still a solid piece of meat, so the number one, you would have to at least remove the klipa and think about shishim in the rest. But he says, there are two issues, and maybe we should come back to this next week. I want to think about this some more. There are two issues. One is that if it were to be, the Shach is clearly assuming this whole cool of the Rama, that he is clear at. That's what the Gra is pointing out. The whole, and that's what the Prima Gra is pointing out, both quoting the Shach. This whole cool of the Rama is when this has been reduced to chop meat. If there's still a solid roast, so then, for starters, the klipa has to be removed. How you say the whole thing is mutter? And moreover, if there's still a solid piece of meat, so you should have said that not only do you have to remove the first klipa, you didn't do it before, but you also have to, maybe the whole piece of meat is now asur, if the rest of the meat is not shishim keneged the original Kedek Klipa. So the Shach assumes that the Rama is only talking about a case where the meat before being cooked, it's not a roast. You took that piece of meat and you ground it into ground beef. And now you're cooking the ground beef. So there's no longer a Klipa in Ikeres. So now there's nothing to remove. That's number one. And so that's why. Now, what we still have to think about more is but why not at least require shishim? As in the case, he's comparing it to liquid. But you're saying it's not exactly the same as liquid. Liquid was liquid from the outset, so it never became a kedik. It never was bolea. So Shach is comparing that to this, but here it originally was a solid piece of meat, unless he means that to begin with it was ground meat. But if it was ground meat, so then why is he saying b'dievi you didn't take off the klipa? Basar tzarech klipa amasa, you didn't need the klipa initially. So Shach says, okay, you need the klipa, but then you ground it up and then you cooked it. So how do you understand that? So that's why the Prima Gadim and the Rebbe Akiva Eiger quote the Magen Avraham thought that the Magen Avraham thought that maybe this means that we're talking about a case where maybe Chamotoch Tzoni and the whole Klipa Zechumra. Let's see, I got a kind of famous Magen Avraham, they quoted Magen Avraham and Hilchas Pesach. We're talking about a case where it's a Chumra. So you're doing the Chumra, so that's very nice, but once you take the Klipa Zechumra, once you're mevashal, then it's not going to spread. But you still have to figure, as to iron out, that the Shach is l'chora saying two things. One is that that you no longer need to take a clay klipa, but the other is that we're not worried about shishim. So he's tzushtelling to the time of the milk. I agree. It's not 100% clear why it's exactly the same. The milk never got a klipa to begin with because the milk was a davar hanivlo from the outset. So he's saying, well, this is also a davar hanivlo, but I mean it became a davar hanivlo later. I'm not sure. Tzarech in. I think that's why they call it the Magen Avraham took a different approach. Okay. So again, so these are the basic dinim. the basic dinim of a chamla toch tzonin, and specifically this machlokas Rabbeinu Tam and Riva. The Shach comes to the conclusion, Allah Lamaisa, by the way, he says, at the end of Sifkat and Ches, he says, although the Mechaber of the Ramah, passing like the Rambam, Rabbeinu Tam, and so forth, but the Trumas Hadeshen and the Maharshal, Pasuki Riva, even by Chalav, you need Shishim, and he says, the Ramah himself in Taras Chatzis is Machmer, the Makam She'en Hefzer Kol Kach. Is that such a big deal? So then if they're not talking about a large sum of money that's at stake, they recommend be machmir for the Riva, that you would need to calculate shishim against the Kedei Klipa in the liquid as well. And Mirtz Hashem, next week we will move on to the world of Maliach Kroseach, Sif, Hey, and On. Shkoyach.